study for Parshas Matos, the section entitled Clay Midjan, and this was taken, the utensils were taken as booty after the successful military campaign against Midjan, and we should be zocha in our time to successful military campaigns as well. I'd like to study with you a pasuk in this week's parsha, both on a halakhic level and a hashkafic level. The pasuk says, "Kol davar asher yavo ba'esh, taviru ba'esh v'taher." This is Perek Lamed Aleph, pasuk Chav Gimel. Ach b'mei nida yischata. Let's understand the following. The clay midjan had two different issues. And this is what the Gemara points out in Masechet Avodah Zarah. On the one hand, there was an issue called Giulei Nachrim, which means that these utensils had absorbed non-kosher food. And this, of course, engenders the entire parasha of Hechsher Kelim, Hagolah, Libun, Kibolah Kakpolto, which means that the Torah requires that you be machshir the kli, that you get rid of the bliya, that you take out all the absorption of isur. And that depends. If it's a davar shebola esh, taviru beish, which is called libun, you have to subject the kli to intense fire in order to remove that which is absorbed, the isur which is absorbed into the kli. And that which went into water, which means it was not used directly on the fire, but rather the bliya took place, the absorption took place as a result of cooking, of bishul, b'mayim, that requires hagaola, and we dip it into hot water. Boiling hot water with all the different dinim, and of course, we have to go through Simonim in Yoredeya in order to see how this operates. But the parsha adds another dimension, and that is Vitaher b'mei nida yischata. The word Vitaher refers to purification. There's some sort of process of Tara b'mei nida. The Gemara tells us that these kelim that were taken from the Midjanim required that we subject the kli to a purification process in a mikvah. And from this, we derive the halacha not of Hechsher Kelim, but rather of Taras Kelim. And a number of questions have to be asked. Number one, does Taras Kelim apply even when there's no Giulei Nachrim, meaning even when there's no requirement of Hechsher Kelim? And the nafka mina is, what happens if I purchase a kli from a non-Jew and it was never used? It's brand new. Or I go back to the non-Jewish manufacturer. There's no bliya. It was never used in the context of cooking or frying. It has no absorption, no bliya of isur. And Chazal established based on this pasuk that there is an independent requirement of tara, which requires that we take the kli to the mikvah, and then and only then are we allowed to use this kli as a kli suda in any context of eating, placing it on our table. That requirement means that a mikvah, a 40 saw, the same identical mikvah that a nida goes into to be a tara self, and for that matter a mikvah for tara purposes, that's the requirement for these kelim. Even though they're brand new, they don't have Giulei Nachrim. If they've been used and they require Giulei Nachrim, then from the sequence in the Pasuk, and this is Machlokas, we've shown him about this, the Ran in Avodah Zarah, it would seem that the process of Hagolah has to take place first. We remove the Isur. Now we've taken away Sur Meira, the negative. Now we're ready for Vitaher B'mei Nida Yischata and put it into a mikvah. One of the issues that has to be addressed in Tvilas Kelim and in Hagolas Kelim is the following. Are we dealing with a Da'oraisa or Darabonan? And most Rishonim assume that not only is Hagolas Kelim to get rid of the Blias Isur Da'oraisa, but even Taharas HaKli to to subject the kli to purification in a mikveh, that too is a d'oraisa requirement. Another issue, does the mitzvah of tefilas kelim require a maisa, an action on the part of the gavra, similar to netilas yadayim, where the Gemara says that if you set up a chain system where the water will land on your hands, that's not enough. Kaf sheni and so forth is insufficient. That's called grama. You need a direct act of pouring the water on your hands. That's called kaf gavra. What about in tefilas kelim? And it's interesting that one of the proofs that is adduced for the fact that tefilas kelim is not a chovas gavra in the sense of a maisa tevila, but rather a chovas cheftis inherent in the kli, is the fact that you can send a shliach for this mitzvah of tefilas kelim. Very rarely do we find a mitzvah that lends itself to shlichus, that you can appoint someone who will be tovel, who will do the mitzvah, implement the mitzvah on your behalf. For example, the classical case of shlichus b'mitzvos would be the case of truma, and there the mitzvah is to see to it that there's a separation between the kodesh and the chol. That itself is inherent in the object, in the chefta. It's a chovas chefta, and therefore the maisa hafrasha is secondary. It's only a means to an end, and therefore I can send the shliach to achieve that goal. Or, for example, makeh, to see to it there's a roof, or there's a fence around my roof. That's a chovas chefta. The gag has to be supplied with a makeh to provide security and protection. I can send the shliach. In the case of Ner Chanukah, is it the Maisa Hadlaka? And therefore, if my wife lights for me, I have to apply the Taz's rule of Ishto Kegufo. I don't want to get off on a tangent. Or is it that the bias has to be equipped with a Ner Dolok, a Ner Chanukah, and that's a Chovas Chefta? I can therefore appoint someone as my Shliach. The Gemara says with regard to many, many mitzvos, there is no Shlichus. For example, the Torah requires me on Chag HaSukkos L'kachtem Lachem. I cannot appoint you as my proxy, as my agent, to take the lulav on my behalf. That's a chovas maisa netila, and the lekicha has to be implemented by the person. It's a chovas gavra, and it doesn't lend itself to shlichus. Tvilas kelim, insofar as it lends itself to shlichus, the bailim who own the kli are not responsible personally to dunk the to dip the kli in the mikvah. They can appoint an agent on their behalf. The reason for that is because the chova is a chovas chefta. It's in the kli itself. And this leads us to the famous question of she'ela, of lending your kelim. So for example, Reuven buys a kli from Peter. The kli needs tvila. And now Reuven lends it to Shimon. Shimon is the borrower. Or for example, in the case of a hotel, I come to a hotel, I want to use the kelim. Do I have to worry about tvila's kelim? I mean, after all, I don't own these kelim. The hotel owns the kelim. But the answer is that, as Tosis points out, at the very end of Masechet Avodah Zarah, the Chiyuv Tevila is inherent in the Kli. This one in Brisk they call a Chovas Chefta. And therefore, it matters not if you own the Kli. Once the Kli came into the possession of a Yisrael, it was owned by a Yisrael, that engenders a Chiyuv Tevila in the Kli V'toher. And therefore, if I want to use the Kli, I need to take it to the mikvah. And of course, the poskim are going to ask the question, what defines a kli se'uda? One of the most interesting questions about classifying kelim is the issue of klei otzer. Klei otzer means those kelim that are used just for storage purposes. They're not used in the context of a meal. So I have kelim, metal kelim, because the Torah talks about metal here in this parasha in Matos. Or klei zchuchis, which are glassware, which are derabbanan, equivalent to metal, because the process by which we make and produce glass. In those cases, if I only use these utensils for storage purposes, Does that engender a shame and classify them as clay su'uda if I don't use them in the context of eating? For example, if I go to the store, let's say, for example, I remember I used to go to a store called Pax. You know, it's on Wilson. Anyway, if any of you know the store, and I buy a glass jar of Hellman's mayonnaise, the question is, how am I allowed to use Hellman's mayonnaise, which was produced by a non-Jew, and it's made of glass? It requires tefillah. So there are many, many answers to this question. One of which is that the kli is a kli otzar, it's not a kli su'uda. It's only being used for storage. However, what happens after I finish using the mayonnaise, and now I'm left with an empty glass, and now I want to use it for salad dressing, and I take the Hellman's, pour it in my salad dressing, put it on the table. Now it's a kli su'uda. One of the most fascinating chidushim was on this issue, which I saw in a sefer called Tvilas Kalim by Rav Tzvi Cohen, is a chidush in the name of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, in which he claims that since it was manufactured with the das, with the intention of being used only for transporting, for selling you the mayonnaise, it wasn't manufactured for the purpose of being a clay su'uda. When the Jew decides to make it into a clay su'uda, it's as if the Jew had produced the kli. He had engendered the shame kli linyan tefillas kelim, and therefore doesn't require tefillah. Fascinating chiddush of Rav Shlomo Zalman. I want to learn with you today, well, tonight I should say, three essays. And again, we had some problems here which continue to persist with the scanner. So normally I would have scanned you the Marmokomos. One of the sources, the essays I want to study with you, is a sefer called Torah Ladas. Okay, Torah Ladas. On Parshas Matos. The second essay that I want to call to your attention is in the Sefer called Sam Derech, here for Parshas Matos, on this sugya of Clay Mijan. And finally, a beautiful essay, which I hope we'll get time for, by the great Rav Aryeh Kaplan, Zichrono Livracha, which is called Waters of Eden. And again, a beautiful insight into our parsha. In this Sefer Torah Ladas, he begins by quoting our parsha. Achas azov es hakesef kol dover sheyom va'esh tavir ve'esh v'taher ach b'mei nida yischata v'chol asher lo yovo ve'esh tavir v'mayim. Again, Periklam and Aleph in Sefer Bamidbar, Psukim Chav Beis and Chav Gimel, if you have a chumash with you. And of course, we have to integrate our parsha, Parshas Matos, with the parsha of clay shares, clay migdash, because the law is that if you used a kli for a carbon, and now there's a bli of that carbon into the walls of the utensil of the kli shares, if that bli becomes nosar, how can I reuse the kli? And that's in Parshas Tzav. The Torah says, V'chlicheres asher tevushal bo yishaver. But in Kli Nechoshes, Vashelo, Marak, Vishuta, Famayim, and this is the parsha of Hechsher Kelim, so we have to put these all together. Now, what's the halacha with regard to clay zchuchis, to glassware? And they're basically, we have to start, with a fundamental distinction. If we're talking about Hechsher Kelim, we're going to have a gigantic machlokes, what the status of glassware is, and I'd be curious to hear what your minig is. If we're talking about Tvilas Kelim, on that there's no machlokes. Tvilas Kelim, with regard to glassware, is an absolute requirement. However, it's not to Oraisa, even if I assume, like those Shitos, that Tvilas Kelim in general is the Oraisa, it's only to Rabbanan. Does that mean we make a bracha on Tfilas Caleb in the case of Klei Zchuchit? The answer is an absolute yes. One might suggest that if you have two Kalim, make the bracha on the metal Kli, which is a Chi of Doraisa, and then and only then go on and with that same bracha be Tovel the Klei Zchuchis. If you only have Klei Zchuchis, you make the bracha on Klei Zchuchis. We make a bracha on a mitzvah Derabanan, and that's a sugya in three different places in Shas. Fine. But let's go back to the issue of Giulei Nachrim. Does glass absorb? Is there Bliya in the case of glass? And the three shitos here are very extreme, with a kind of a pshara, compromise sheet in the middle. One shita has it, that there's no Bliya in Kli Zchuchis. Glass and ware do not require Hechsher Kalim. The second shita is that, on the other extreme, a Kli Zchuchis has the same status as a Kli Cheres, which is earthenware, because it's made of dirt, of soil, of clay that's heated up, of sand. And therefore, no matter what you do with it, it's going to be Balea, and you can't remove that Balea. That's called Kli Cheres, and Yotze Midei Dofyo Liolam, which again is the parsha in Tzav that we mentioned before, Yishaver. You just have to break the cleave. There's nothing you can do with it. In the middle, we have a shita that says, yes, there's a partial blia, even in the case of Klei Zchuchis, and yes, you can be maflit that blia through the process of Hagola, and you take the glass, and you subject it to hot water in that sense. This has a tremendous nafkamina on Pesach with regard to Klei Zchuchis, and what is the status of Klei Zchuchis on Pesach. The first shita that maintains that there's no blia at all whatsoever in Klei Zchuchis is the shita of Rebbeinu Tam, and that's again at the end of Avodah Zarah. You'll find the shita of the Eshkol, the Rashba, he has many, many Rishonim, that Klei Zchuchis einam tzrichim hechsher klal. That's the most extreme shita on the lenient side of it. And this shita is brought down in many Rishonim, the Ran, and in the Achronim you'll find it mentioned in the Shulchan Aruch, as we'll soon see, in Hilchas Pesach, and in Agos Hagra, he expands on it. Fine. Then we have the second shita, and that's the middle of the road shita. That's the opinion of other Rishonim, amongst them the Arzarua, and he gives you all the Baron Makobos here, that Kli Zchuchis, as far as Hagola, has the same status as Kli Zchuchis, as far as Tvila in Mikvah, just like Tvila, we give the status of a Kli Zchuchis, a Kli Mateches, it's like metalware. So too, glassware has the status of metalware as far as Bli is concerned. We have to subject these Kalim Tagola. The Ritva, on the other hand, says that there's Blia, but there's no possibility of Hagola. And that's also the opinion of Rabbeinu Yechiel Miparis, that's quoted in Agos Maimonios, and you'll see all this here quoted extensively. La'alacha in Arachayim Siman Tav Nun Aleph, we have machlokus between the Mechaber and Ramah. The Mechaber writes that Kli Zchuchis einam tzrichim shum hechsher she'einam bolim. There's no blia with regard to glassware, and therefore we could use them just with shtifa beans. We rinse it off in cold water, and we're ready to go. The Ramah says yesh machbir v'yom de Kli Zchuchis afilu hagola lo mahani lehu v'chein aminik be'ashkenaz u'bemedinas elu. And therefore the Mishnah Berurah writes that according to the chumrah of the Ramah and the Ashkenazim, even if you would use Klei Zchuchis only with cold water, it would still be asur, because sometimes you might have used it with hot water, and therefore the blia engenders an Easter, and there's no way of getting that blia out of the Kli. The Mishnah Berurah goes on to discuss what happens if you used a Kli Zchuchis b'dieved, what's the status, because again, Hagola doesn't work. And he says it all depends on Rov Tashmisho. If it was generally used for hot water, then anything that you did with that Kli is Asur. If on the other hand, it was used Rov Pa'amim with cold, then B'dieved, we can certainly rely on the sheet of the Mechaber, and it's okay.
And then the Mishnah Berurah goes on to a long discussion about glassware, about kosos, and do we use them for chametz, do we not use them for chametz, and so forth and so on. Then we have something called shriya. I don't know if you've ever seen this. My father, Zichron Levroch, used to do this very often. He would take glassware that was used only in cold, and he would be machshir them for Pesach. What you do is you fill up a tub. We used to do it in the bathtub with cold water, and every 24 hours for 3 days straight, he would change the water and add new clean water. And after the 72 hours, three rounds of shriya, it was kosher for Pesach. Some of the poskim say you could even set up the second day on Shabbos, and that's a fascinating issue unto itself. The Rabbi Shafai Shinigus Moshe has a chumra with regard to bakbuke kli yashk, which means with regard to yayin saruf, that means whiskey. He thinks that there's a very strong blia in the case of whiskey, and as a result, he doesn't want to allow any hechsher of those kind of glassware for Pesach. Now, as far as other Yisurim is concerned, we have a number of shitos, all of which are summarized here in this article. I'll just mention them in passing. And that is that according to one shita, we can apply the same logic that we do in the Mechaber and Tuf Nun Aleph 2. Isur, so if you use glassware, or you came in contact with glassware from non-Jews and it came in contact with non-kosher, you don't need anything more than cleaning it out, shtifa v'adacha. Others say, l'chatchila, we shouldn't use them because maybe he won't be meidiach them well. And therefore, that leads us to the third shita that is belia and it requires hagola. And the fourth shita is that hagola will not work and they have the same status as kli cheres. And we have a fifth shita that says there's only a little bit of belia in glass and therefore they can be subject to hagola. The Yorach HaShulchan in Yoredeya Simon Kuf Chaf Aleph comes to the conclusion that a minag pashut, that means amongst Ashkenazim, is liknos kol mini kleis chukis yishanim minakusim mishafshim heitev madichnos avamayim umat bilan, that we indeed buy kleis chukis even though they're used from non-Jews, we clean them well, we dry them off, and we assume that we did a good job. We put them into the mikvah, and we're ready to go, and we can rely on that. Then there's something called pyrex, which is used in very hot flames. It's the process of manufacturing gives you a glass that's intense, that's very strong. And many poskim are makil, and they say that everyone could agree that pyrex lends itself to hagolah, you could be machshirit. The reason for that is those who are objecting, those who are very inhibited about allowing hagol in klei schuchas is because you might be afraid that it'll break, it'll shatter by the force of the heat of the boiling hot water, and if you won't do a good job of hagolah, that doesn't apply in the case of pyrex, because since it's used, and that's how it was manufactured, in the context of boiling hot water, therefore we can rely that you'll do a good job of hagol. Fine. I remember as a child, this is where I'm really dating myself here, we had something called yardside glasses. You know, we used to take the yardside glasses, and we didn't want to, it was an aver to throw it out, and after yardside, we used to take it to the mikveh, and we matbil it, and then we used to use it as glasses. Here, Rabbi Bloom, in this Sefer Torah Ladas, has an entire discussion, which is pages and pages long, about the status of snow for a mikvah. Can you dip your kelim into a mikvah? And this would be relevant to a nida as well, in certain climates, certain places where they don't have access to a mikvah. Can they use snow? Now, if the snow is melted, then it seems like the poskim are matir b'shas adchak. However, if it's not melted, this is a real problem. And he quotes a very interesting chiddush of the Sefer Marcheshes. He was one of the Dayanim in Vilna. He was
murdered by the Nazis, Yimach Shemam, and his name was Rav Henech Agish, a tremendous gum, and he has a whole love that's based on a Tosefta in Nida to explain why Sheleg, why snow, cannot be used as mikvah water, based on a Tosefta, and his thesis is that you need something called a chibur. Chibur means that every particle of water is considered connected, but in the case of Sheleg, he explains that every part of the Sheleg, every particle of snow is a separate entity, as if it's totally biavir, it's independent, and therefore it has the halach of kifin, which cannot be used for a mikvah. What about tefilas kelim on Shabbos? Are we allowed to be tovil kelim on Shabbos? And this is a gigantic controversy amongst the poskim, and the answer seems to depend upon a gemara in Beitza on Daf Yud Zayin Amud Beis. The gemara says that according to Beis Hillel, a person is allowed to go to the mikvah on Shabbos, okay, and he can be mitar himself. However, a kli you can only take to the mikvah on Erev Shabbos and not on Shabbos itself. And the Gemara explains, Kuliyama Mias Kli B'Shabbos Lo, my timer. And the Gemara wants to analyze why is it that with regard to a kli, Tvila B'Mikvah is prohibited on Shabbos. Rava says to Gzera that he might take the kli and carry it for Amos. That's Rava L'Shitaso in many cases. The Gemara quotes the opinion of Rabbi Yosef, Gzera Mishum Schita, meaning that if he comes to bring Kalim into the mikvah, he might, and this goes back to the time when they mitire Begadim, he might put Begadim into the mikvah, and then he might squeeze out the water from the Begadim. Rav Bibi says, Gzera Shema Yisheh. Okay, that's the sugya to itself. Rava says, Nirek Himitakin Kli, and that's the Shita that we accept. That in the case of a Kli that needs tvila, it needs tara b'mikvah, until you take it to the mikvah, it really is it's not a kli, it doesn't function. And by taking it to the mikvah, you are making it into a functional utensil. That itself is called tikkun maneh, which is a tolda of meleches makah b'patish, and therefore it's asur. The Gemara goes on to say that even the sheet of Rava is only a shita derabbanan. It's not really tikkun maneh because you don't physically change the chemical structure, the physical structure of the object. You only change it halachically. And therefore it's only nirek mitakin maneh, but it's not technically a da'oraisa. La'alacha, there are poskim who are matir tefilas kelim on Shabbos v'yontif. And the question is, how to reconcile those poskim with the sugya. He says the following, I'll just read this one paragraph, and then we'll go on, because we're running out of time. He says the following, L'inyin kelim t'meim osol adbilim v'shabbos v'yontav al l'inyin t'filas klei suda shekona me'akum nechleku ha'poskim imutav v'shabbos v'yontav alo. L'fi ha'rif, Rabbeinu Yerucham v'arash, Mutal hatvil kelim chadoshim b'shabbos v'yontif. Omnam harashba beis abchira means the Meiri, and Tosfos in the name of the Ri, they prohibit it. In other words, those who are makil like the Rif, they assume that the Isur Tefilas Kelim on Shabbos, which is formulated by Beis Hillel and Beitza, only applies to kelim tmeim. But with regard to Kalim Tahorim, which required Tvila because of the Parsha here in Klei Midjan, the Gezeros that the Gemara introduced do not apply. And the truth is that if you go with Rava's opinion of Kibitakin Kli, then you understand the Rishonim who say that just like to be Mitaira Kli, that was Tomei, is usher on Shabbos because of Metakei Mana, the same thing should apply with regard to Chiyuv Tefilas Kelim, and therefore it should be usher to be Matbil Kelim b'Shabbos V'yant if it's also Nireh Kimetakein Mana. Okay, there's a lot more here which we really should discuss, but I want to move on to the second essay to share with you a very interesting discussion regarding the Ramban. And this is in the Sefer Sam Derech. The Ramban writes, V'hizir osam ato bagolas klei midjan me'isurei hagoyim. The Ramban is bothered. Why at this particular juncture does the Torah warn us and command us in Agolas Kalim? This is not the first battle. This is not the first time in history that Klal Yisro was successful at a military campaign and took utensils from the vanquished nation. There was Sichon, there was Og. The Ramban assumes that they took Shalal, and he quotes a pasuk in Dvarim to prove this. So he asks the question, why is it that in the case of Midjan there was a need to be machshir the Kalim, and that's our parsha, Hagolas Kalim, but with regard to Sichon V'Og, the Torah completely omits mention of the requirement of Kol Dovra Shayavu Ba'esh Taviru Ba'esh. And he answers the following. He says that Sichon V'Og Malchei Emorihem V'Artsom Minachlas Yisrael Hi. He says that Sichon V'Og were nations of Eretz Canaan, and when we vanquished them, we inherited their land as far as Kibush Eretz Yisrael. That's what we call Eivra Yarden. And that's the entire parashat Matos of Bnei Gad Bnei Reuven. V'huto lehem kol shlolam afilu ha'isurim. Even things that were prohibited were licensed by the Torah d'chsiv. The Torah says, Ubatim Malayim Kaltuva Sholo Milesa, the Omar Abel Sein of Echulim Daf Yud Zayin Amad Aleph, Kalve the Chaziri Ishtarile. Even non kosher food was permissible when it was taken as part of Kibush Eretz Yisrael. However, Avol Midjan Lo Hoya Mishalahem, Lo Lachus Artsam, Rak Linkom Nikmasam, Harguosam, Vilachlu Shlolam, Ulakach Nag, HaIsur Vikleihem. The first moment in Jewish history when there was an Iser of Blia in Kalim was only Midjan. Because Midjan was not inherited, the battle against Midjan was Nakama, because the mice of Bilam, etc. And therefore the Heter that's written in the pasuk Ubatim Malayim Kol Tuv, and the Gemara Chulin Yud Zayin does not apply to Midjan, but it does apply to Og and to Sichon. And it would seem from the Ramban that the matir of Batim Malayim Kol Tuv is Kibush Eretz Yisrael, and that matir applies, as we said before, in Sichon V'Og, but not in the case of Midjan. And here he refers us to the Rambam. And we're trying to analyze the Rambam under this question. What's the matir of Ubatim Malayim Kol Tuv? Is it only Kibush Eretz Yisrael? The Rambam in Hilchas Moloch in Perek Ches at the very beginning says Chalutzei Tzava, the soldiers of Israel, Kshikansu Bigvul Ha'akum, when they enter into the land of our enemies, V'chavshum, and we will kovesh that land, V'yashvumehen, Mutal Lehem Lechol Nevelus U'treifus U'basach Hazir V'chayotzebem. And the Rambam quotes the pasuk Ubatim Malayim Kol Tuv. But the Rambam has it in Hilchos Milchama. He doesn't breathe a word about Eretz Yisrael. So we have now a fundamental machlokas, just to summarize, between the Ramban and the Rambam. The Ramban holds that the halacha of matir, of batim malayim called tuv, is a subset or a spin-off of the mitzvah of kibush Eretz Yisrael. The Rambam, on the other hand, holds that it's a subset and a spin-off of the mitzvah of milchama. When everyone commanded to go do battle and vanquish our enemies, this heter of batim malayim called tuv kicks in. Memela, according to the Rambam, that's what he points out here in the Sefer Samderach, we're back to square one in the Kash of the Ramban. Even in the case of Sichon Viog, we should have a problem of Blia, no different than in Midjan. And if you'll ask the question, why is it that we need Heksher Kalim, whether it be in the case of Midjan, or if we turn the clock back to Sichon Viog, since there's a heter for Chazir and so forth for Masurim in the context of Milchama and Kibush, the answer is because the Rambam adds another condition. And this is what the Radbaz embellishes. I deliberately skipped a few words in the Rambam when I read it to you because of I wanted you to follow the logic here, the development. The Rambam says that Muto Lechol Nevelos Utrefus Basar Chazir Vachayotzve Im Yirav Yud Reish Ayin Bet. In other words, only if he's hungry, and then the Rambam goes on and says V'lo Matzah Mashiyochal, there's no food that's immediately accessible. El Macholos Elu Asurim V'chein Shosei Yayin Nesech. All that, says the Rambam, is permissible under the Halacha Batim Malayim Kol Tuv within the context of Milchama in general. Not for Eretz Yisrael, La'alav Dafka, but only because he doesn't have access to other food. This is the way, according to the Rambam, the Torah makes it easier, alleviating some of the pressure of Milchama by allowing you to eat Dvarim Asurim. Says the Radbaz, that according to the Rambam, all Milchamos, Hutru, Kalbei Chazir, he says, even if he's not in a state of sakana, because then pikuach nefesh would kick in, el she'eino tzricha l'troach u'levakesh machal mutter, the Torah says you don't have to start worrying about where you're going to get your badatz hechsher, now you're in the middle of a milchama. And he says, l'chein hutzrichu l'hagil klei mijanim k'dei lechol mehem dvarim shel heter. Interesting. You just finished saying that there is a heter to eat macholos asuros. So why do you need hagola? And then the Radbaz goes on, and he makes a fundamental distinction. He says that with regard to milchemes Eretz Yisrael, hutru kadle chazire afilu eno barov. But with regard to shal milchamos, hutru dafka im elo mashiyochal klal. So what I'd like to try to suggest in my own language, based on the tools I got from my Rebbe, is that the Radbaz postulates that even the Rambam makes a fundamental distinction between kibush Eretz Yisrael and Shar Milchamos. And this introduces the famous fundamental chakir between Hutra and Dechuya. Meaning in some cases, the Torah says that Isur is considered Heter. In other cases, the Torah says it's Isur, but for the sake of achieving a certain goal, like, you know, for the sake of bringing someone back to health, you're allowed to benefit from Isur. That's called Dechuya. Hutra means the Isur doesn't exist at all. It's completely undermined. Dechuya means the Isur is there, but the Torah allows you and permits you to violate that Isur. You will not be punished for violating the Isur. For example, with regard to Pikuach Nefesh, we usually assume Hutra. And therefore we don't start making calculations, well, let me limit the violation of Shabbos. No. Just do what you have to do. Or a Chol on Yom Kippur. Kisudash Shlomo Melech B'Shaita. That's called Hutra. I think what the Radbaz is postulating is a fundamental distinction between two heterim of Ubatim Aleim Kol Tuv. With regard to Eretz Yisrael, it's Hutra. With regard to a Melchama that's not for Kibush Haaretz, we could call it a Melchemes Rishus, or even if, in the case of Midjan, you might upgrade it to the status of Melchemes Mitzvah, but it's not Kibush Eretz Yisrael, that's called Dechuya. And the Nafkamina is whether or not I have to wait till it's a very dire situation. In the case of Eretz Yisrael, he says, no. The Torah said, don't be matriach yourself to look for kosher food and eat chazir. That's part of the hutra halacha that applies to Eretz Yisrael. But in the case of a Melchemes Midjan, according to Radbaz, it's not hutra, it's dechuya. For the sake of a situation of dire necessity, where who knows what's going to happen because I don't have food, then the Torah is matir. But the Isur still remains intact. And the Nafkamina is going to be Kalim. Because in the case of Eretz Yisrael, since the Torah completely alleviated this Isur, and Isur Nefach Lios Heter, it's a Hutra Halacha, there's no need to take these Kalim and be Machshir them. But in the case of Midjan, where we have a Chefza Disura, and therefore the Bli is a Blias Isur, the Torah only permits it under a certain context and for a certain goal, now I want to use those Kalim for my purposes. I want to cook in these Kalim that I've taken as booty. The Bli is a Blias Isur, and therefore I need Hagol. That's Lefi Anias Daiti. However, the Kesef Mishnah has a different shot in the Rambam. He understands that Li Olam, that even with regard to Eretz Yisrael, you're only allowed to partake of Kadli Chazire if you have nothing to eat, and therefore it seems that according to the Kesef Mishnah, even in Eretz Yisrael, the Isur is not converted into Heter, it's not Hutra, but rather Dechuya, and therefore even in the case of Melchemes Sichon V'Og, there should have been a need for Hagolas Kalim, and we don't understand. We don't have an answer to the Ramban's objection here, his question as to why the Parsha of Hagolas Kalim was postponed until Melchemes Midjan. Okay, I'm going to take just a half a minute's break, and I'll be right back. And those of you who might have to go to sleep, it's pretty late, this is a good time to do so. If you have another 10 minutes, I want to share with you an insight of Rav Aryeh Kaplan, Zichrono Livracha, into the parsha of Taras Kalim. The mikvah is used in primarily three different contexts. One is to prepare the Kohen, whether it's Aaron HaKohen and Bonov, as far as chinuch meaning to prepare them to take on the position as Kohanim. Aaron becomes the Kohen Gadol, or in the case of the Kohen Gadol Yom HaKippurim. In this context, Tvila, keep in mind the Kohen Gadol had to be Tovil 10 times, no less than 10 times on Yom Kippur. That is not related to Tumah V'Tara. And then we have Gerus, a Ger needs a mikvah, Ger or Gioris. And then we have Tfilas Kalim, that Kalim need mikvah. So we associate tevilah in mikvah with removing tumah, and that is definitely essentially our understanding of tara b'mikvah, and that's the case of a need, of course. But in three other contexts, we find tevilah b'mikvah, even though there's no tumah involved. You know, I buy a kli. It's brand new, it was manufactured by a non-Jew, it needs vitar, as we saw in our parsha, and yet, there's no tumah. In the case of a ger, who's coming to be this guy, there's no removal of tumah. And in the case of Aaron, a Kohen, or the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur, has nothing to do with tumah. So Rav Aryeh Kaplan, Zichrono Livracha, he died at the age of 48. What a loss. Irreplaceable. He comes up with an insight that tevilah in a mikvah is required to achieve a change in status. He calls it almost a rebirth. He speaks about the fact that the mikvah in many ways is similar to kvura, in which we terminate one status, one existence, and enter into a new existence. He compares it to the womb of a woman, where from which a baby is born and enters into this world. It's a complete fundamental or existential change in status, a rebirth. The Kohen Gadol, in order to go lifnai v'lifnim, needs to recreate himself. The ger, of course, who's kikat shenolad dami, takes on a whole new entity, a new identity. He needs tefillah, b'mikvah, to change his status. And even this kli that's now going to come on the table of Klal Yisrael and is going to be like the Mizbeach, a kli shareis, it needs a change in status. Of course, the paradigm is a tamei who needs to change his status, transform himself and become pure, become tar. He needs tefillah b'mikvah. Rav Kaplan proves from the parsha of Chet Adam Arishon, where the Torah takes a break in the middle of the parsha and speaks about the rivers of Eden, as he calls them, waters of Eden, and it seems totally out of place. And he proves from many, many different sources that a mikvah is like Mei Eden of Gan Eden, of those rivers that are described in the beginning of Sefer Bereishis. That basically the experience of tefillah b'mikvah allows us to link up to Gan Eden, which means to Adam Arishon Kodem L'Chet. Chet has an impact upon the human being, a very radical and profound one, and as a result of Chet, man is transformed into a different kind of a being. Misa came into the world as a result of the Chet of Adam Arishon. However, there are two experiences, one historical and the other that repeats itself over and over again in our lives, in which man has the ability to come back and to be reinstated into the original Adam Arishon Kodem L'Chet. The first is Migdash, or Mishkan. The Mishkan, which is the place of Ashras HaShechina, has the Bechina of Adam Arishon Kodem L'Chet. We're back to Gan Eden. This is a place that's dedicated to the Shechina. There's no room for sin. And Kshibot HaBayis, we will again historically re-experience Gan Eden, Adam Arishon Kodem L'Chet. But in the meantime, until the Mikdash is restored, we can experience Kodem L'Chet in a miniature way, in a microcosm, through Tefillah B'Mikvah. And by linking up to Adam Arishon Kodem L'Chet, when we enter into the waters of Gan Eden, we now become brand new people. There's a total transformation. Because Adam Arishon Kodem L'Chet is a different entity, a different personality entirely. And in this chapter, which you absolutely must read, called The River from Eden, Rav Kaplan explains why is it that in all these occasions when mikvah is required, we're able to understand how mikvah operates. Again, on our human level, obviously the divine being has decreed in his infinite wisdom, Gzeiras HaKasuv, a decree that we can never understand in all its depth, but Torah Yiva Lilmot and Yitzhak, to some extent we can understand rationally how the mikvah operates. The mikvah means that man immerses into the water, the mikvah reestablishes a link with man's perfect state, the state of kodem achet. He therefore loses the status of tumah and is reborn into a state of purity of tara. Now the tumah can enter into the Beis HaMikdash. This is on page 345, a beautiful quote. He explains that mikvah has to be linked to natural water. And of course we have to know the halachas of mikvahs for this. The mikvah water cannot pass through anything that's capable of becoming defiled, because that would break up the link back to the waters of Gan Eden. And I'm going to read one more section to you from this, and then we'll have to end the shiur. He speaks about the fact that tumah is usually associated with death. There are many kinds of ritual defilement that are caused by contact with dead bodies, dead animals, and the like. Other causes of uncleanliness are associated with man's imperfection. And ultimately, all tumah is a result of the chait of Adam HaRishon. Death and human imperfection is a result of that sin. But if man would have remained in his elevated state in Gan Eden, nothing would exist that would cause uncleanliness. There would be no death. And this explains why a tameh cannot go into the Beis HaMikdash. And after this, he has a section about tefillas kelim, which he calls pots and pans. He explains why it's dafka metal, and he explains why, in order to bring this into the table, it needs conversion, it needs a gerus. He says the immersion is a form of conversion for our utensils, much like a person who converts to Judaism. And therefore, even brand new utensils that were never used need this conversion. And basically, it's a process of tara that changes the status of the kli by linking it back to Gan Eden through the mikvah. I believe that there's a lot written here in this essay that should be studied, and it's very uplifting to take a parsha as complicated as mikvah and try to rationally understand it, again, according to our own abilities to understand it. And I would very, again, as I said before, highly recommend that you get a chance to read this piece. It's a magnificent piece. It should be given also to potential Bali Tshuva, because, you know, Bali Tshuva, of course, is struggle with parts of the Torah that seem to have no apparent meaning. Mikvah for some Bali Tshuva is a very powerful spiritual experience, but for those who grapple with it because they're more rational and more cerebral and intellectual, this is an excellent piece, Waters of Eden by Rabbi Aryeh Kaplan. Before I say goodbye to you, I just want to give a yashar koach for those who are here: David and Chaim and Joel, Ruby and Byron. And I need your help with Michael, because I don't see Michael in the camera. Mimi's here too. Shalom Aleichem to Mimi. I do not know who Michael is. If Michael, you could at least... Stupniki! Great! Mikey Stupniki. Okay. I'm sorry, Mikey. Since I don't see you and I see Michael, sometimes the brain doesn't work. I want to thank everyone for joining me. I know it's a tough hour. Get some sleep if your chilent is ready for Shabbos. And hopefully you'll have a wonderful Shabbos. We're hoping for a quiet Shabbos here. If anyone has any questions or wants to say hello, please turn on your mic. And you have the alternative of using the chat. And we're learning how to do this. Again, this is an experiment of sorts. If I find a good alarm clock, I'll be able to do this again next week if you're interested. This is the best turnout I've had for a WebEx shiur, so it helps to restore my faith that maybe something could come out of this. We have the 3 weeks now, and after that we have the Bein Hazmanim period, we'll see. I got a Yashikov from David Spiegel and from Mikey Stefniki, wishing you all a great Shabbos, Ruby. Okay, a safe and quiet Shabbos. Yashikov. Again, we covered quite a bit in this shiur. There's a lot more here, but you know, we have to do what we can do within the time that we have. Okay, I'm going to go daven shachris now and try to help my wife a little for Shabbos. So I'm wishing everyone a Shabbat Shalom. Thank you so much. And if there are any questions, please ask them now or send me a little bit of text. If you have any general comments about how we can reach out to new blood or times or so forth and so on, how we can spread our wings. It's been very difficult for me to sort of spread the word. I've only used my own personal email address list, and that doesn't seem to be enough. So I'd like to recruit you as recruiters to somehow spread the word all over the world. Right now, for example, it would be time for a lunch and learn in Australia. So if we'd have a way to get to the Australians, it would be really cool. You know, it's at night in the eastern part of America. It's brand new day here in Israel, and in Australia they're already eating lunch. So it would be really interesting if we can get representatives of those three parts of the world. And these are just ideas that I have. All right, Shabbat Shalom.